Hey Joe, I like your show. I tell everybody that's my shit. And if you got a long ride and you like getting high, maybe go and take another hit. We gonna laugh out loud, that's what it's about. Nobody ain't safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, cause the motherfucker's 6'4". Hey Joe, it's time to start the show. Up, up and away we go. Mic check and I like your flow. Everybody, here's Joe.
Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of the Joe Prano Podcast. I am your host, Joe Prano, and this is episode 14 of the show. My guest today is Nate Craig. He is a comedian with a brand new comedy special called Preferred Customer, which is out now on Apple Music, Spotify, iTunes, all the places that comedy albums are available. And I highly recommend that you download it or stream it today. I was listening to it right before the show started, and it's fantastic. I asked Nate to come on and sit down and talk with me in hopes that you guys enjoy our conversation and buy or rent or stream the special, because Nate's a friend of mine, a fellow West Side comedian, and he's a guy who I often find myself on shows with, and I always make it a point, if I see he's on the flyer for a show or if I see he's on the lineup when I arrive, I always make it a point to stick around and watch Nate's set, because I know there's a lot of comedians who enjoy comedy, but I don't sit around and watch or listen to a lot of comedy. I don't really often even stick around my shows long after, or at least not in the room. I'll go to the bar and have a drink and wait for the crowd to disperse. But Nate always does something in his sets that I really enjoy, and it was no different on his comedy album that I was just listening to. So I sat down with Nate, and we talked about his album, his role on Netflix's Maniac, which is out now, and opening for Bill Burr, which he does regularly, and of course, for all of you hockey fans out there who have been coming at me lately over my hockey takes, we got into a little hockey talk, because look, I'm trying to put an olive branch out there to the hockey community. I know a lot of you guys are beefing with me, but you know, Nate and I talked hockey, and hopefully that'll calm the storm a little bit. So enjoy the conversation with Nate, and go get Preferred Customer right now. If you want to come see me, I will be performing this coming weekend up in the Bay Area. I'll be in San Francisco on Friday the 9th, Oakland on Saturday the 10th, Santa Cruz on Sunday the 11th, and Marin County at the Throckmorton Theater on the 13th. So come check out all those shows, or any of those shows if you're in the Bay Area. I love going up to the Bay to perform, and I'm excited at the opportunity to do shows in every little nook and cranny of the Bay this time. So wherever you are up there, come out and see it. Should be some great shows. Also, if you're listening to this before Sunday the 4th, we are doing a fantastic show at the Comedy Store Main Room for the Save the Waves Coalition. Eddie Ift is organizing it, and he has only comedians who surf on the lineup. Myself, Lachlan Patterson, Chad Goes Deep, Chad Kroger of Chad Goes Deep fame, Monty Franklin, Andrew Norelli, Steve-O dropping in to the lineup, and apparently a famous, well-known special guest who better surf, Eddie. He better surf, whoever he or she is, they better surf. But it's going to be a great show for a great cause, protecting the ecosystems around coastlines around the world. So come out to the Save the Waves Comedy Wipeout show at the Comedy Store Main Room on November 4th. And of course, please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. If you're listening, you like it. If you're listening, you're a fan, hopefully. And if you haven't rated and reviewed and subscribed, please do that. It helps everything with the podcast. Helps me chart, helps me get on New and Noteworthy, helps me do all that stuff. Rate, review, and subscribe. So important. And it's the least you can do, honestly. If you want to do more than the least you can do, go to patreon.com/Joe Prano and become a patron. Going to start doing some exclusive web streams. I know I've been talking about that for a while, but I've been busy, which is good. After the Bay, got the holidays coming up. So as I sit around getting fat again, hopefully not, during the holidays, hopefully some live streams for the patrons out there. So subscribe and become a patron and review and do all those things. And also, enjoy the show. Here's Nate Craig. Well, thanks for coming over, first of all. And
thanks for having me on the JPP.
Yeah, I have sort of a rule. It's not a rule. It's not a hard and fast rule, but I'm limiting the comics that I talk to. I feel like comedy podcasts, just comedians talking to comedians about comedy over and over and over. So I always say there's got to be some reason other than like, I just don't have a guest this week, so let me call a comedian friend. And the reason for you is, first of all, you have a new comedy album out, Preferred Customer.
Yes, sir.
It's out everywhere.
Everywhere.
iTunes, Spotify. Is there a hard copy that can be purchased? Amazon or anything like that?
Man, I don't fuck with hard copies anymore. Why would
you?
Why would you?
Right.
Nobody wants
Unless you're going to do like a vinyl.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're going to be the hipster comic that does the vinyl.
Vinyl's the only way. And you know what? There's a market for that, so I get that. I'm not going to hammer those guys. It always looks nice. It is nice to sign them. You know, five years ago, I did a bunch of dates with Kanane, and he had the vinyl in it. You know, don't get me wrong. It looks sharp.
And you got to, but you also have to know your audience is an audience that's going to buy. Like, I don't think the Joe Prano fans own a lot of record players.
No.
They're not even buying my digital downloads.
My mom might be the only Nate Craig fan with a record player.
And also, I wanted to have you on. You've done Dirty Sports. Uh-huh. You just sat in for me on Dirty Slides, but I'd love to have you on
getting dirty
on this show, because I've always been a supreme fan of your comedy. You write. People always ask me, like, comics, like, who should I know about that I don't know about? And I have like a list of people, and I was just thinking about, I'm like, Nate's not the person, not a person that I say on that, but you're on a different list in my head of like people who I wish I wrote jokes like.
Oh,
like I listen to your jokes, I'm like, fuck, why am I writing shit about just being a drunk when I can be writing stuff about this?
About other people being drunk?
Yeah, exactly. But I was just listening to your album before you got here, and it's fantastic.
Halfway through.
I told you, I've heard most of the jokes in person, but you did it. Where did you record?
Did it at the Dynasty Typewriter, which is like this, it's downtown, it's the Hayworth, and they refurbished it, and they made it real nice. So I saw it a couple times, and I thought, you know, it's only 200 seats, so I thought I could fill. I want to be able to fill it. I would have loved to be able to do two shows, but the crowd was great, and
you filled it for one.
Filled it for one. The theater was. It sounded like I thought it would sound, and also had heard. The people that did it, Jamie, Vanessa, Jessica, they all did a great job with the theater. They told me that, you know, Dan Harmon does his podcast there every week, and then it sounds great when it's full, and it did.
It sounded fantastic. The crowd sounds great. And when you decided that you were going to do it, I saw, like, I hadn't even realized you have multiple albums available.
Three,
so you three out. How long?
This is the first one, though, that I've done it in front of a crowd that came out to see me. The first two were literally, I got an hour of material. I'm working at a comedy club that I love. Let me spring this on a room full of strangers. And that's cool if it goes great. But if it doesn't, there's gaps, there's holes. And it's, you know, the first one I did it.
This was a home game.
This is a home game.
Friends,
you gotta
family.
Have a home game. You can't be playing road games when your listenership depends on it. You know, when people are judging your whole career on how a room full of strangers thought about your finger banging joke.
Yeah. When I recorded mine at the Stand in New York, I had a bunch of friends and family come out, and I liked it, but I was thinking the opposite. I was like, well, the next one, I just want it to be strangers, because I was looking out. I'm like, there's my fucking brother. There's the guy I know from college. Like, it was just too much, like, taking like note of who was in the room as I was doing my stand up. But
yeah, nobody knows that though.
Yeah,
nobody knows that, and you're just, you know, it's like. You're a pro, dude. You make this material work. You go out there and you bang and you sell it to strangers who don't know you from Adam.
Yeah.
When it comes to doing a product that is going to represent you for decades, for the rest of your career, who cares? There's
right.
Just, you know, I did go out before this show. I had Fairbanks did a set and Bree Pruitt did a set from Portland. She's been out here for a couple of years now. She's hilarious. High Priestess. She's got a bunch of stuff she does in town. She's got great shows. But I went out and made an announcement before, like, hey, listen, you know, like I might get, because I like to talk about politics. I have opinions
right.
that I think are more important than they are. And I just can't not say the shit that I want to say. So I was just like, look, I'm going to talk about some serious stuff. You don't have to, like, if you agree with me and it's not funny yet, you don't have to applaud or clap. You know, that clapter shit is an infection in
yeah.
comedy right now. And I was like, you know, just trust that I will make it funny. So I did try to, and that was also meant to, like, because you can hear it when people are laughing too hard.
Yeah,
you can hear it when people are whooping and laughing and
trying to sell you and
carry
like,
you
hey.
Off on their shoulders yeah. before you even started your hour. You know, and it's like, I wanted to kind of protect against that, but also, you know, those specific moments I was referencing, like I just wanted those to feel thought through and. Organic.
And I think the best comedy, whether it be an album, a special, even when I go see people that do just a club set, but like a longer club set, I think the best ones have an up and a down to it. If it's just some guy with the pedal to the metal the whole time, it's like, were these people paid to be here?
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's funny, but he's not that fucking funny.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? And also, I think the best comedy as well, we know that. We're not trying to get an applause break with every single line. Some of it's a throwaway, some of it's to set up the next one. I was watching Norm Macdonald and I'm like, he's purposely taking them down
yeah.
so that they have some energy for when he brings them back up. And I think
yeah,
that
yeah.
there's a music to that. And in listening to yours, you absolutely do that. And
oh man, thank you, dude. Yeah, no, I know I definitely you can just exhaust a crowd. Well, I mean I don't often exhaust my crowds, but you know, yeah, like when somebody's just slaying,
yeah,
and you can hear it if they feel like they have to be being slayed.
You said you had Fairbanks do a set before you. How long have you and Chris been roommates?
He moved in like 5 years ago. Moved into the
The first time I found out that you guys were roommates, I think, was when I came to your 4th of July party.
Oh,
and I was like, wow, that just seems like such an odd pairing.
Right.
Like, were you guys friends, or were you guys?
Yeah, we were friends because there was the post college comedy diaspora. You know, everybody
yeah.
from everywhere, you know, usually starts in college and then does open mics and then goes off to the whatever city they think they can develop in or get better in or
yeah.
be, you know, whatever, not miserable. And I went to Chicago. My buddy Jim Hamilton went to Austin. And also Michelle Balloon, we all went to Wisconsin. And then they moved to Austin. And then Chris, people like, you know, Chris and I know just a bunch of people from Austin.
The Austin
team. And so I knew him peripherally. And then other people would work Cap City. And then I worked Cap City. So I think I met him in L.A., but I knew of him from working
yeah.
Cap City. He was probably on the road or something when I worked there, and I didn't meet him right away. But, at some point, he won Funniest Person in Austin. And the industry always liked to cover that that contest because of the people that booked it, and Cap City's a great club. And so I just knew of him, and then I met him out here in L.A. And I don't know. We just, we have similar interests.
Yeah. is there any competitive spirit to being two white dudes in Man. Comedy together in an apartment?
It's not a smart move to compete with Chris Fairbanks about being funny.
Yeah. I mean, he's fantastic.
He's fantastic.
And you guys have wildly different styles.
Very different styles. We definitely can chop it up and just laugh and hang out. We're definitely like great homie. I mean, he was one of my best friends.
Yeah. You said
living together really did that, but like, I mean, it's just so fun. Like, he's fun at parties.
Yeah. Yeah. You're from Wisconsin, and I know you did slides when the NLCS was going on.
Yeah.
You had your Brewers and your Dodgers. I was rooting for your Brewers because I'm just anti-Dodger at this point.
Sure.
Chase Utley broke a leg of a Met, and like he's on my shit list forever. Right. So, but I was watching it, rooting for the Brewers, and then last week when the Dodgers won the World Series, I started watching season two of Making a Murderer, and I was like, you know what? Fuck the Brewers, and fuck everybody from Wisconsin, this fucking cesspool of a state.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look. Sometimes our best foot is not put forward in the media, and you know, we have some real rough highlights as a state. But we also have some great highlights. I was just so happy to see the Dodgers get lit up in the World Series. They were just soft. They were so soft.
Yeah.
And we were a better team.
I agree.
I don't care enough about baseball to have any qualms about being a sore loser.
Yeah.
We were a better team.
You were a better
team. Brewers were a way better baseball
right.
team.
They have more talent, but you guys were a better baseball team. And in the end.
I don't know if they have more talent. Like our pitching staff.
Certainly, yeah.
The bullpen
was crazy.
We had the arms. Maybe they do have more talent.
It's tough. It's tough to compete with, like, you know, the even just like a top four. It's tough to compete with Turner, Machado, like
Turner, Machado, and what's his name in left field? I mean, and then
Bellinger.
I mean, what happened was Walker Buehler pitched a couple great games. I mean, he won their one game in the World Series too, right?
Yeah.
And he pitched a great game in Game 7. I kind of wanted to start Hader. I mean, it's Game 7, dude. Go all out.
Yeah.
But whatever. And then why am I blanking on the kid's name in left field? Is there Bellinger?
Bellinger, yeah.
Bellinger, the catch. That won that game. That won Game 7.
Yeah.
That catch. Because that was Yelich going 2 for 2 with a home run and a double or a triple if he doesn't make that catch.
Right.
And with 2 on, I think there was there. That was the game.
Yeah, it was tough. I was rooting for you. I know. We talked right before we started. You said you got a nice push from being on Bill Burr's podcast, doing his podcast.
Yeah.
You've been on the road with him on and off for a while?
Yeah, he'll have me open for him one or two times a year, and it's awesome.
As a comic, that's like unless you're already huge, you know, that's got to be like the guy that
it's
you want to go
best.
Out with. Like everybody, Bill Burr's every comic's favorite comic.
How did
you get hooked up with him in the first place?
Steel
you just saw your set?
No, I met him at the Improv, and then we were just talking about hockey, and then there was a couple people around, and like then all of a sudden there was this industry skate that like it was pretty much all comics. There was like a couple comedy adjacent folks that came out to it, and so you know it's like Bill and Steve Byrne and a bunch of great guys, and I straight up asked him. I was like, hey, you're working in Brea this week, can I open for you? He's like, I already got an opener, you can MC. And I was like, yes. And then he saw my set, and then he knew I was from Wisconsin. We just hit it off. He's a dude. And then he was like, you want to do this run through Wisconsin in the Midwest with me? It started in Madison and went all the way to Cleveland. And then he's been working me ever since. He's got a bunch of people he uses. He really is good to
share the love, spread the love around.
Yeah, he really helps people out.
Is there any – I got to imagine people that come out to see Bill Burr shows just must be in the best mood ever. They're fucking fired up for comedy. Is there any sort of like you're the guy on before the band?
Definitely. The thing about Bill Burr fans is there's either people who are like humbled by even the concept of doing stand-up comedy – that's half, and then the other half is people who think they're Bill Burr.
Right.
And there's a lot of those people
who drag their wife in, like this guy's just like
this
me.
This guy's to me, and this you're gonna. This is what I think.
Yeah.
This guy says what everybody thinks.
Yeah.
So whatever he says, you listen to him. When I can't make my words work.
So do you have to go out
there's
there?
A lot of that.
Are there guys that do that are that show up and they go, I want to scream at the first guy? Like,
sometimes you have to. Yeah, sometimes you have to throw somebody off the top deck.
Yeah.
but it's fun because then even both of those types like to see that happen.
Right.
So it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. And it's just like handling a heckler. I have always rooted for hecklers at my shows.
You root for them to be there?
I root for them to say something funny.
Yeah. Oh, you, yeah.
Because if they say something great. Funny, I
everybody's
laugh at
having
it.
A good time.
Yeah, everybody's having a good time. And the second, if I laugh at it and they're like, oh, he handled it well, then they'll follow me off a cliff.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, this guy's here just like we are, and we're not, it's not about him. He's not trying to be a bitch.
Yeah. The idea that they're helping the show is a bad attitude to walk in. Like, you're not helping the show.
No, you're not.
But you as a comic can make them help the show.
Yeah.
It's the people that immediately take the like, okay, we're going to do this. You're going to fucking talk. Like,
yeah.
Can I get a Pepsi up here?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
Now we got to make a thing.
Yeah.
You know, comedian destroys heckler. Like, we don't need that.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not rooting for them
to be
do
there.
It.
Yeah.
After they've done it. I'm rooting for what they decided to do.
For it not to be a record scratch.
Not to be a record scratch. I mean, well, if it is, then it's murder town.
Right.
Because you just said something dumb in front of 1,000 people or whatever it is.
Do you remember your worst heckler? You remember somebody you were like, I actually hope that person like fell ill after the show?
Oh, yeah. There was this chick in Milwaukee, and I was doing... it was early Trump. It was before Trump got elected. And I was doing Trump material, and she was like, have you ever had a real job? And I was just like, I lit her up for like 20 minutes to the point where it was like getting uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm sensitive about that. But at the same time, bitch, you don't know me.
Right.
Like, I grew up, like, my family farms soybeans, corn, hay, and beef cattle. Suck my fucking dick.
Yeah.
I've made a job for myself out of the, you know, nothing for longer than you've been in the workforce. So what? Have you ever had a real job? Because that was just the most thoughtless. Like, up and leave.
But that's what's amazing about, like, and you see this on Twitter now, and anybody who's in the political, like, they're defending President Trump is like, they're coming at it like he's Mr. fucking coal miner. It's
right.
Like, has he ever had a real job? What the fuck are we
Never.
Talking about here?
Yeah.
The guy got handed $2 million.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, who are you standing for, and why is this the approach you're taking?
Why is this fake
yeah.
New York tough guy?
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
That New Yorkers, that's what I've said about Trump from the beginning. I'm like, welcome to hating Trump. New Yorkers, we've hated him for 40 years.
Forever.
Like, dude, his book came out in the 80s.
Forever.
I was like 8. My mom's like, this guy's a fucking idiot.
He's the worst.
Yeah.
He's been the worst. He's been a laughingstock. Nobody in...
But you do a lot of the Midwest.
Yeah.
Do you change at all, like, the approach to Trump when you're there?
A little bit. I mean, but I definitely, like, I don't have any sympathy for somebody that wants their sensibilities to be tiptoed around. And, you know, it's not my fault you voted for the guy.
Yeah.
He's a barrel of fish. He's shooting fish in a barrel made out of fish.
Right. Yeah.
I'm a professional comedian.
With a fish gun.
So if you're going to be sensitive, let me guess, you'd also call me a snowflake.
Right.
But you can't take a joke about this fraud's toupee.
Yeah.
Suck my dick. Squarely now, suck my dick the entire time I'm up here. I now am rooting for you to have a bad time at my show. Because you're being sensitive and you're owning it. And I have a couple lines in there where I draw it back. It's like... Because you can't be like, you know, the problem with, I think, both sides of the political spectrum is each side has a different version of taking human beings way too seriously. For the right, it's my stuff. You don't talk for my stuff. You don't tell me how to protect my stuff. I identify with that. I understand that. But too much of that, you're up your own ass.
Right.
For the left, it's other people's stuff. You can't
you got to be sensitive to other people's stuff. And I identify with that.
Right.
It's called empathy. But too much of it, and does it reach a point of counterproductive?
Right.
Being counterproductive.
It's like, that's the thing. Even talking politics these days, like, we follow each other on Twitter. I shit on both sides equally because I think just the whole, I mean, anybody with a brain knows we're in this mess because the two-party system's a fucking scam, and it's getting you to vote for a color and getting you rallying people like, oh, you fucking hate that guy? Wait until you fucking put this guy up, and now you're going to vote for him. That we went on that one, too.
Yeah.
But I'll make fun of Trump, and I'm a fucking snowflake libtard, and then I'll make fun of, you know, Obama or Hillary, and I'm a fucking MAGA supporter. It's like, you guys got to step back and be like, people can still be criticized without being, that doesn't mean I'm fucking the other team.
Yeah.
And that's like, you can't go anywhere. You can't make passing comments, I feel like, on stage now without somebody going, okay, this is what he's about. And now I'm going to fucking, I have a notion that, all right, Nate Craig is a fucking snowflake libtard.
I also don't think it's even at all, though. I mean, there's a mentally ill person in charge of the country right now.
Absolutely.
There's a mentally ill person whipping up other mentally ill people.
I 100% agree with that. I actually, I've said it before, and I know you'll hate me for saying this, but I'm glad he won.
Yeah.
I think we as America are like, it's, we need to be a, we need a full rebuild, you know?
I hope it's like being
in the NBA.
I'm not sure we can. I'm not sure we got it in us. I'm not sure that arc that we were on didn't get us as far as we could go before factors that we can't control were going to wreck us anyway.
Right.
I think this kind of shit speeds up the demise.
What I think is, like, I think the one really good thing that comes from this, every single person on every side of the political spectrum suddenly cares what the president of the United States is doing with every minute of his day. That's a good place to be, because a lot of times people walked around like, man, Obama's so fucking cool. I'm sure he's doing good shit in there. Like, life is great, right? Meanwhile, he's like, I have expanded the drone policy, and I'm fucking, you know, like, I like Barack Obama. Seems like a great guy. Wasn't up to, like, the best shit all the time. But people are like, I don't know, seems good. Except, you know, then we're saying, oh, you're a Tea Partier if you're saying he's a fucking asshole. You know, it's just, I like that everybody cares now, except me. I don't give a fuck.
Right. I hope so. I think a lot of people are tuning out.
You think so?
I think so.
Because it's past the point of...
Well, it's ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, even if you are the kind of person that's like, hey, man, I don't even like talking about politics. You can't watch Donald Trump speak. I mean, if you can't watch that and not think that you are hearing an insane person,
right,
make shit up.
And that's
a downer.
That's why we're in a bad, really bad way, because there are people, there are hundreds of millions of people that watch it and are like, no, it's totally normal. This is my guy.
I like what he's doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if that's all you want out of your politician is spite and pride, well, then...
And that's what I've said to people, too, is like, people go, look what our country's become. I'm like, you know why he won? We were already that.
Yeah.
Like, he won because...
I don't know, man. I honestly, this is as tinfoil hat as I get. I don't trust those numbers at all.
Right.
I don't trust those voting machines. She won by 3 million votes, okay? He made up that margin in the Electoral College with 75,000 votes. That's just over 3% of 75,000 is just over 3% of 3 million. If that's Vegas, that's a fix.
Right.
Those are numbers. That's math. I don't care. You can't place those numbers so perfectly in just three states. That's the Electoral College. That's what you did. Hillary didn't go to Wisconsin. Get the fuck out of here, dude. That's way too specific. It's just too specific. And, you know, the company that makes those machines is... you know, a Republican donor.
Yeah.
Diebold. Look them up.
Right.
Diebold. They make the voting machines.
It's all
fucking crooked.
That's the thing. It's paper all ballots. Fucking crooked. It's all a scam. It's all like.
Yeah, but here's my.
Like, she stole the fucking primary, you know?
She did.
And she's.
I was a Bernie Sanders guy.
Yeah.
I've been a Bernie Sanders guy since since the field established itself.
Yeah.
And, man, I didn't, you know. But at the same time, I'm looking at a mentally ill person who's been the worst my whole life. He's been a laughingstock my whole life. Like, now the whole world is staring at our toupee, dude. It's not good for us.
Yeah.
And nobody can trust us because they know that that element exists. And what's the next Trump going to look like?
Odds are he's going to be smarter.
Right.
He might not be as relentless in his, you know, malleability and his, is that even, in his message,
right,
his ability to just like change whatever he wants based on how he just wants to be cool in any room he's in. He changes his pitch.
Yeah.
And I don't know if,
I mean, that
you have to have a certain level
again,
of
as a New Yorker, as a New Yorker, I'm like, this guy's a lifelong Democrat that's been fucking hanging around with Hillary for as long as she's been in New York. It's like, talk about changing his tune. He's like, she's a fucking crooked crook criminal. Like, you're like, oh fuck.
Like he's doing with Ted Cruz.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's the worst.
I'm
hopeful, like, I also maybe stupidly, that it's darkest before the dawn. That this is this is us bottoming out. This is us getting the number one draft pick.
Could be. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Nothing worse in the NBA than being the 8 seed.
Yeah, well, I hope LeBron runs for president.
Yeah. It's The Rock. It's The Rock who's running, you know?
At this point, I'm like, I almost just said without hesitation, I'll vote for The Rock.
Yeah. But you would, right? If it was Rock Trump 2020, you're like,
no, man, I'm going to vote for Kamala Harris. Who's a centrist?
Yeah.
Who's a total, you know? Yeah. I don't know, man. I hope this is us.
I love though, because I see you at shows around town, and I follow you on Twitter, and like, I know you're worked up, and I love it. I love watching people. Like, this is good. This is good for comedy.
Yeah.
You know, I know people always say that, like, oh, is Trump good for comedy? That was like the big shtick when he got elected. Like, oh, everybody's doing fucking hair jokes and he's orange. But I think it's good for comedy, not in that he's a punchline. I think it's good for comedy that people are angry about it, whether they're liberal or just like, I'm angry about it because he's just making a fool of us. I don't give a fuck either way. I just think, like, I'm angry because we look like assholes.
We look like assholes.
Yeah. But my thing is always like, we kind of are assholes. Like, we're lucky enough to be in LA. I'm New York and then LA. But you go to the middle and you got nothing to do before the show.
Yeah.
And you go to the mall.
Right.
It's a lot of camouflage and cargo pants.
Yeah.
And fucking fat people. And you're like, we are assholes.
Okay. But there has to be a moral compass. Otherwise, the United States is not what it's. Is not great.
Right.
If there's no moral compass, the United States is not great. It's not worth a fuck. It's just a fucking, it's a drive-through on an island. It's a drive-through in the middle of two oceans, dude.
Yeah.
And if there's no moral compass, then we're just garbage, and we don't deserve the fucking extra value meal.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we do at this point. That's why I'm hopeful. This is us bottoming out.
All right.
This is us. I was rooting for him, but I was just rooting for him against her because I was like, we don't need to. Again, I don't want to be an 8 seed forever. Like, let's just bottom out and fucking refresh.
Yeah.
So, some happier news. You're engaged now.
I am engaged.
I heard you say that, I think, on stage at one point, and I was like, oh, he's doing a bit.
No, man. I got engaged. We were seeing each other for a while.
By the way, I'm very happy for you. I know we've talked about it. You seem super happy. You talk about it the way people talk about it in fucking movies.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm over here going like, that's it. I'm on an island here now. Like, one of my last guys just got back on fucking, you know, the SS Minnow and is like, all right, you're on your own, Gilligan.
Yeah.
You're 40. You're white. Good luck.
Well, you're living with your gal, man. This is a good setup here. You're well on your way. First of all, I met a great woman. And then, you know, aside from that, like, we live in a very kind of, you know, it's a young city, a young part of the city.
Right.
And I don't know, it just... running out of places to go, Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you looking forward to the marriage material?
Yeah, of course.
You just put out an album. I feel like that. You're like, I need another hour now.
Yeah.
can I plan a wedding?
The real pressure is kids. I mean, that's the. Because I like to, and this goes back to what we were just talking about. Like, it is boring if you got to write around the hairpiece, you know?
Yeah.
Well, not specifically the hairpiece. I think people glossed over that entirely, missed the whole fucking.
Yeah.
People just assumed that everybody was going to be talking about a hairpiece because they should be talking about a hairpiece, but they didn't. But that said, like, you got to, what's it really about? Like, what's it about for every individual who's at your show or watching stand-up? Like, how are they going to identify with the logic or the whatever sentiment, you know, is behind the, you know, the bit or the comic device that you do to, that you're using to frame the absurdity. And so it's about, you know, the brain. It's about your own identity and your whether or not you can control this existence or how you control your existence. And I mean, what better way to really get insight into that than to make another human being?
Yeah.
I love people's kids material. It's so endearing and it's so fascinating to see them like learn about themselves through another human being that they are now in charge of. So that's as far as like, if I was going to do anything for material, it'd be have a kid.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the dad, like, yeah. There's going to be a dad festival at some point. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's got to be a dad.
That's
like,
hilarious. There totally will be a dad. How has there not already been
right.
a dad fest?
I should just organize it and make it. I'm just here for all your dad jokes.
Yeah.
Are you guys, do you have a date planned?
No, we're going to Mexico in a couple weeks. We're going to look at venues. Yeah, we're going to.
Destination wedding.
Puerto Vallarta, yeah. We're just going to figure it out. It's late next year.
Yeah.
We're in no rush. The only thing we're in a rush for is to have an answer when people ask us, do we have a date yet?
Right. Just start giving them a date, and then
right.
It's not official until it's on the fridge, you know,
yeah.
Until I get a fucking magnet with your face on it.
Well, like, we have to put that off because then, I mean, the point of doing a destination wedding is that like a lot of people can't make it.
Totally, that's the best part.
You can't give them a date now.
Yeah, yeah, that's like Lachlan's joke. He's like, I got to decide a year and a half out if I want chicken or fish. You know, like I don't know if my dietary restrictions will be 18 months from now. A big part of the podcast, like especially in sort of limiting the number of comics, is I want to talk to people in all kinds of art, whether it be music, comedy. You're a great example of somebody I think that does, you know, a very artistic form of comedy. I heard you in the beginning of your special, you kind of have a preamble almost.
Yeah.
What inspired?
Oh, thank you, dude. Well, first of all, thank you.
To me, I'm like, Nate, well, I know I've heard a lot of these jokes and he's going to go some places, but I'm wondering just like, what is this? I was literally thinking, what is this going to be out of the gate?
Well,
you know? And then you came with something completely different than, you know, just your stand-up set.
Yeah, I wanted to do that. I definitely wanted to hook people. And I also wanted to like give a nod to, because I mean, I'm, you know, I don't have an agent. You know, I've been fortunate enough. I got good jobs. I got to shoot that Netflix show Maniac on Netflix. Check it out. But you know, you're not going to make us it's hard to make a comedy special, period. Nowadays, to get a comedy special sold as a straight white dude is just not feasible. Without an agent, it's not happening.
Right.
So, I mean, I got to stay in my lane.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. I like comedy albums.
When you get a kid, that'll give you a leg up.
Yeah,
If you got super fat, that would help.
Okay, all right. Both those things I can do. In that order.
Yeah.
I was listening to something. Joe Rogan had Everlast on his podcast the other day, and Everlast was talking about the music industry, and it was all stuff I identify with. And, you know, I put out, this is my third album, so, like, putting that stuff out, like, I learned a lot of what he was talking about, and Rogan said something that I disagree with, which definitely happens. He said that he thought that it was such a limited way to consume comedy. That's the only way I consumed comedy.
Right.
I had cassettes on cassettes. I loved listening to comedy albums. I like listening to comedy albums.
And you still
just,
do?
I still do. And just looking at the, you know, the numbers that, you know, I see people stream it. It's different. They consume it bit by bit now. They right. don't consume it as an arc. You know, you don't have to switch the tape over.
Yeah.
And go to this. To the B side.
Fast forward to the end if you want to hear, you know, Boogie in Your Butt.
Yeah,
you know?
And so I wanted to give a nod to kind of the person in their headset. I wanted to say hi to them. And I also, for the whole taping, I wanted to make the people in the room aware of them. I thought that made it a more expansive probably reverse the order of that. I probably wanted to make it a more expansive experience for anybody in the room, and then also kind of say hi to the.
So you, I imagine you wrote that out. And
I did. Yeah, I.
But did you get a chance to say it before then?
I did it. I ran it once in Milwaukee at I'm from Wisconsin, so I had a bunch of friendlies in Milwaukee, and I did a show at a theater, this awesome theater, the Milwaukee Underground Collaborative, and it's right downtown. It's right by all the stadiums, the new Forum, you know,
right.
Milwaukee Forum, and it had to change, but I learned a couple things that stuck, and I learned it went a little long that time, and I was able to tighten it once, and then I did it for a couple friends, did it for my girl. She's like, I think that's good. And I don't know.
I think it's great. It's fantastic.
You.
So get
it's a hook.
Get the album and listen,
you know.
Start from the beginning.
Yeah.
Don't just hit the starred track on Spotify or whatever.
Of You, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Because that's my market. That's who I'm going for.
Right.
People streaming comedy now. That's who everybody's going for if you can't sell a Netflix special.
Right.
So my advice to other comedians, own your own shit, put out your own shit, and, you know, if you don't already, start to pay attention to how people stream comedy.
So what, besides listening to other folks' albums, watching other folks' comedy specials, what sort of art do you consume on a daily basis?
Huh. A great question.
You when you get in your car, you do you listen to music? Do you listen to podcasts? Do you listen to
music? Love KCRW. Living in LA, one of the best things about LA is the radios. The radio is so good out here.
Yeah.
Like it's because it's just such a huge market share.
And the great thing about because I love KCRW as well. Nowadays, you can stream. Like it doesn't matter where you are. I love KEXP and Seattle,
yeah.
And I just have their app, and like if I'm not feeling KCRW, I'll be like, let's go to, you know, Seattle's alternative radio station. It's KEXP.
KEXP?
Yeah.
In Seattle?
Yeah.
I'll check that out.
It's fantastic. It's, it's KEXP.
Yeah, it's great when you have editorial boards at places that don't have to listen to, you know, what. They don't have to have their numbers at a certain point so that Honda's happy with their...
Right.
Their,
and you just have to hear the same Drake song twice an hour.
Right. No, it's great out here. So I listen to a ton of music. I have an art degree from the University of Wisconsin.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Art
and comm arts double major.
Okay.
Ceramics and photography, where my studio focuses. And then... radio, television, and film production. And I was the soundboard operator.
Do you still do ceramics?
No. I wish I did. It's great. We had a ceramics studio at my high school that was phenomenal. The teacher was just a great man. He was great at, you know, he was a beautiful artist and a really great teacher and he was just a mentor to a bunch of people, so it felt natural doing it in college. It wasn't like I was just like, oh, I'll just try this clay shit, but I had been doing it for 4 years before I went there. And but I also wanted to do, you know, I also knew I wanted to get into production and stuff, and so it was just, you know, get it, what, double major undergrad degrees.
Yeah.
You know, I did that shit-faced.
And how, yeah, how soon after college did you do stand-up?
During college.
Okay.
Yeah, I started, well, I was the soundboard operator for King Lear. And my dad was a music teacher growing up, and he also did, like, plays and stuff, mm-hmm. like musicals.
Yep.
And so it kind of was in my head. And so watching King Lear, I was like, whoa, this is very high art. Shakespeare,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Shakespeare. And
I've heard of him.
Yeah. them. And I mean, some people say it was a them.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I just wanted to start doing plays. And then I figured that I was always a stand-up fan, and that I should be, that being on stage was something I should learn how to do. And then I just started doing stand-up, and then I just kept doing both. And then Chicago's a place you can do both. So a lot of improv I watched early on,
mm-hmm.
a lot of theater I watched early on. Got a chance to work with some really talented people. And
that's where you connected with the showrunner of Maniac, which you're now on.
He was actually a friend, personal friend, that I met. He is from Wisconsin, and we connected very quickly that way. But yeah, being in Chicago at the same time, like, we definitely were aware of what we were working on. So I think that made him feel confident that he could throw me a bone.
And you're in how many episodes of this first season?
Five. And I'm not sure if there will be another season. If there is, my character might go away. I don't know. They'd have to get Jonah Hill back because I'm his brother.
Right.
But
are you his brother?
I'm one of his brothers, yeah.
Okay.
And so we would have to be, I don't know. It's the whole show takes place in their brains, in Emma Stone and Jonah Hill's brains. So, like, I guess they could, just because it's a once you get inside the ceiling's off. There's no, you know, it's
you can go anywhere.
Possibilities are endless. And so, like, you know, for what, you know, why wouldn't you have people from past seasons do cameos?
Absolutely.
But I don't think I'd have like a significant part if it wasn't heavy on the Jonah Hill.
Right.
Yeah,
it's interesting because I started watching. I'm only a few episodes. I think I'm four episodes in.
Yeah.
But it's really the Netflix model is like, sit down and binge all this. But the show is, I don't want to say it's weird because that sounds negative, but it is. It's a weird show because, like you said, it's happening in their head. And then even the stuff that's happening in reality is almost weirder than what's happening in their head.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't binge it. I watch one, and then I'm like, all right, let's fucking walk around and think about that for a little bit.
Good. I love that. It's out there. And Patrick, he was the showrunner. He wrote the entire thing more than once, I think, because between him and the director, there was, you know, some push and pull about, like, what show they wanted to make. And, you know, they're both incredibly talented, and Patrick was able to, you know, make it work. And then, you know, Carrie made a nice finished product. Carrie Fukunaga, the guy who did, he's doing the new Bond, and he did the first season of True Detective.
Is the new Bond the Black Bond?
Not yet. I think it's Daniel Craig's last one.
I love that. That's one of my favorite ongoing, like, you know, stories that, like, just people are not going to rest until there's a Black Bond.
I mean, it's going to be Idris Elba, right?
Right. I mean, that's
got to be.
And he, like, I feel like he's pushing that along. Like, who doesn't want to be Bond?
And what a great conversation to be had about your career.
Right.
In the meantime.
Yeah. This just like 5 years ago, they decided he should be the Bond. And then it's still like he's the guy.
A Black Bond?
Yeah.
If you can't get behind a Black James Bond, go the fuck back to your barn.
Right.
You go back to your barn and you think about what you've done.
My argument, it's funny because I don't care if there's a woman Bond. I don't care if there's a trans Bond, a Black Bond, an Iraqi. Like, I don't care. It doesn't make a fucking difference. But it's funny because the two sides of the argument, it's like the people who also are like a trans, you know, Scarlett Johansson can't play a trans woman is like, yeah, Idris Elba should be Bond. I'm like, pick a fucking lane. It's just acting, right? Like, we'll create characters. Like, I feel like the woke crowd simultaneously wants a Black Bond and like people that are like gender specific or race specific to play whatever. Like I can't play, even though I look Middle Eastern and people think I'm Middle Eastern all the time, but I'm Italian. You can't play an Iraqi in this movie. Mm-hmm. You're Italian. That's fucking, you know, you're stealing some Iraqi actor's livelihood.
I get that, though.
You get that?
I get that. Yeah, for sure. Because,
I don't know, man. What better opportunity to break down people's prejudice than, like, I mean, if you're going to tell the story,
I don't need to see Scarlett Johansson. I don't need her.
I mean, the answer for that is, great, get a trans actor to do it, but no, like, who's the trans actor that's opening movies, you know, that's, yeah, like, selling that's $20 million worth of tickets?
Right.
So
right, that's,
it can be Scarlett Johansson telling a trans story, or it can be no one telling a trans story. Which is why I'm like, yeah, definitely make Idris Elba Bond. People will go to like it. People will go to fucking hate it. But you're going to sell a lot of Bond tickets, that's for
those
sure.
Those numbers are going to be through the roof in Idris Elba Bond movie.
I'm like, I'm so pro commerce and art together. Like, yeah, if you can make something really good and it makes a ton of money, fucking great.
Yeah.
I'm not like, oh, it has to be this underground thing. Like, a lot of artists are always like, oh, if it's a big studio movie or if it's a big, you know. I did a joke on Twitter a couple years ago where I said, here's a look at the Black Keys new album cover. And it was just like the back, and it just said like Volkswagen ad, 7-Eleven ad, you know, because like they're those guys. But also they get to, who's selling fucking music anymore? Right. So if that's why we keep getting like dope Black Keys albums is because they know five of them are going to be IKEA songs, then fucking good for them. I don't give a shit.
Right.
You know?
And then you get the singles that you need.
Yeah. But like, so let Scarlett Johansson tell a fucking trans story.
I love that you say that about Maniac, because I really feel like, even though, you know, it was such a process for Patrick to write the show that they eventually made, I think he kept like such a literary element to it, to the storytelling. Like if you listen to it when,
yeah,
you watch it, it is, because he started out as a novelist. And that's how he got into TV. Like he wrote a couple books that just got blown up by the New York Times, and then, you know.
And you can see, you can tell that in watching the show,
mm-hmm,
in the visuals when they're showing something that has to be like, you're supposed to learn something just by looking at it, looking at the computer and the way like the computer's lights are going. It's telling something. You know that has to be written out. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that has to be on the page somewhere, and this is what it's going to look like. And that's the stuff I'm always like, man, that must have been pretty – that must have been a paragraph on a script that says this is what this fucking computer,
yeah,
is going to be looking like.
The details were
– and that's what I like. When I – people always ask me, I love going to the movies, and I love talking about movies and thinking about it. And people always go like, what'd you think of that? And I'm like, I don't know. I just saw it. Can you give me like – if I'm still thinking about it in 2 days, I'll have a review. Otherwise, it probably sucked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you go, you watch fucking Avengers Civil War, and then I was like, I don't even remember what happened 2 days later.
Haven't even thought about it.
Yeah. But, like, Maniac, that's what I was doing. I was, like, watching a couple. And even my girlfriend, she's, like, into the binging thing. And I'm like, can we just slow down? Because I'm, like, fucking still processing that last one. I want to know what I think about it before I move on.
I like that you're watching it. I like that you're taking your time. In my opinion, it does get better as,
yeah,
it goes on.
Meanwhile,
yeah,
I binged Making a Murderer because I'm like, these, sure, fucking people.
Well, there's some. It's watchable.
Yeah,
it was impressive to me that I don't know if I've ever seen a documentary with no narrator.
Yeah. Fantastic.
That's pretty impressive.
To have enough
footage to tell the story the way you want to tell the story and to put it together in a way. I get it. If people say, you know, they told it the way they wanted to tell it, you know, blah, blah, blah. Still, like, that's a lot of, you have to know your footage. You have to log,
yeah,
so many hours.
It's funny because the way I feel about it and the way people go like, well, they left this out and they left that out, is the same way I feel about, again, I was half rooting for Trump, but like, it's the same way I look at people who are defending and go, you're a crazy person. because I don't care what they left out. The fucking original prosecutor is a scumbag, lying motherfucker. I don't need to know any of the details.
Yeah, yeah.
I know human beings. I have an ability to look at somebody and go, this guy's a scumbag.
How about when the police officer, that the best moment of the whole series is when the officer gets caught lying on the stand about the license plate. I mean, the whole show's worth it just for that moment. To see a cop get caught lying on the stand was, I was just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And any cops getting caught in fucking nets is, I'll definitely binge hours
with
of shit
big,
to get.
Stupid crew cut. Eyes got all big. He was looking like a deer was about to get ran down by a semi-truck, dude. It was great. And then the fact that they couldn't find any blood in the grass. We don't need to talk about making murder. They couldn't find any blood in the grass. That's where they said the chick got murdered. Okay, well, then I guess we should figure out what happened.
Right.
Because the way you're saying that it happened to the point where you're putting two people in jail, that clearly did not happen.
It's funny, though. The only reason I bring it up is because every time I hear Wisconsin, I start to boil over just the making a murderer case. Like, fucking Wisconsin. Yeah. You goddamn accents and the cheese and the fucking
I love it.
Pinning murders
I
on
thought
people.
You were saying, what? Because somebody tweeted at me after Burr's podcast that people from Wisconsin say Wisconsin, but that's not how people from Wisconsin say Wisconsin. Wisconsin people take out the I and then put in an extra A and an H.
Yeah.
It's Wisconsin. That's how people from Wisconsin, but you say Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how people on the coast say Wisconsin. It's Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin. Wisconsin.
Okay, good. I thought you were making fun of the way I said it.
No, not at all.
Because I said
I'm sure you're saying it correctly.
No, there's nothing worse than when somebody from their shitty state wants you to say it the way they want you to say it.
Yeah. So we're talking about art before. You said you listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
This is one I ask people. It's sort of my repetitive question on this one because it's my favorite. It's my favorite question to ask anybody about it.
I sense a gotcha question.
No, not at all. If you were stuck on a desert island for 1 year.
Oh, I got the answer to this.
You can bring any amount of music with you, but it's got to be one artist.
One artist?
One artist.
Oh. Huh. I would for sure choose a composer. I would choose probably Brahms or Mozart or Beethoven. I thought you were going to say one album, and I was going to say Jimi Hendrix Band of Gypsies.
Okay.
That's my favorite album. I'll listen to it on repeat for the rest of my life. I don't care. It's just beautiful. I just hear Jimi Hendrix like at his peak live. It's great. I could choose Hendrix too.
Yeah.
Because, he's got a couple. There's
plenty.
It's, it's a couple different bands. And
right.
Just so much in such a short time that was awesome.
What about a composer? Why did you, because you pivoted. You're like, okay, I know. And then you're like, oh, wait. What took you to composer?
Yeah, first of all, you instantly get more musicians.
Right.
So you're listening to so many different things. And also, just by the compositions are so complicated and long. It's just you got more to listen to.
Yeah.
And you'll probably, I would just assume, and I could probably make this assertion and stand by it, that the more complex the music that you're listening to, the more expansive it is. That would probably be, I stand by that.
Yeah. Have you watched Norm's show on Netflix?
I watched a little bit of it.
He has, when he does jokes at the end, he has everybody reads off the blue cards.
Yeah.
My favorite one of the whole series, I think he has Michael Keaton on. I think Norm actually reads it though. He says, when Bach sits down to write a new piece, his first thought must be, well, I got to make this really fucking hard to play. I just thought it was so great. You're absolutely right. Everything that goes with a composer sitting there and going like, oh, I'm, I have to create something for dozens of people to come together and do together.
Yeah.
It's, I honestly don't even know how your brain works like that. That's why I love music so much, because as a comedian, I'm like, I can catalog my thoughts. Is that good enough?
Yeah.
Is that art?
Yeah. I think it starts with just being a musician at first. And then that kind of understanding, that in-depth understanding, it grows from there.
Do you have any musical?
I used to play the trumpet, and I used to sing. My dad, like I said, he was a choir director. He was a music teacher, and so I had to do that.
Well, I thought you were a method actor in your maniac role.
No, that I'd sang. Well, they dubbed over us, but only because one of the other brothers was straight, tone deaf. Yeah, one of the other brothers was straight.
That's me.
Straight trash. But yeah, I mean, not like we would have done a – it would have been – I thought it would have been really funny because it would have been bad. And then we would have been like these, you know, this well-to-do, put-together Upper East Side family of douchebags that were applauding each other for being awful. I thought that could have been funny, but they had it.
They dub you over anyway. Yeah. Like, no, it's got to be.
Yeah.
We didn't write it that way.
Yeah, it's got to be.
It's not that way in the novelization.
Yeah, Jonah's character's got to stand out.
Yeah.
More. But I did sing, and then that, as a kid, you know, that just was the opposite of cool.
Yeah.
The opposite of cool. I wish I would have kept playing the trumpet. That's the closest thing I have to a regret. But, yeah, I started playing ice hockey instead. I played that last night.
You're still playing hockey?
Fuck yeah, bro. It's like my favorite thing in life.
What is that look like these days? Like, who's out on the ice?
Yeah, a bunch of
similar
transplants.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of East Coast Canadian transplants. A couple, 3-4 French Canadians.
Are people hitting each other still?
No. It's a group. I don't even play in a league. It's just a group of guys who are
just
like
knocking it around.
Good players.
Yeah.
But then there's also a couple, you know, guys who are, you know, beginners or picked it up later in life.
Because I was like, I don't even play basketball anymore because of I don't have fucking health insurance. And like, I mean, I know my Achilles is going to roll up my ankle at some point.
Yeah, no, good. That's smart. Yeah, basketball. I mean, I can't do high impact stuff. It really messes with me. But hockey's pretty smooth if you know how to stay upright. Even if you do fall, you slide.
Right.
It's not like you fall on pavement. You stick. Everything's absorbed by your clavicle.
I've gotten into it with hockey fans lately.
Yeah.
Because I've noticed this thing. I'm not much of a hockey fan, but I am a Ranger fan. All of my friends Ranger fans. I went to high school in Connecticut. Like, big hockey, you know, hockey and lacrosse way more important than baseball and basketball, what I did. And I love watching it. Love going to live hockey games. And great, you love hockey. I love that you love hockey.
Yeah.
I've noticed that hockey fans it's like they almost hate the NBA more than they like hockey. Like,
there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of like animosity toward the NBA. And I was just like, hey guys, fucking, let's just agree that those guys are just like on a whole other level of athleticism, and it maybe is not your bag, but like no need to shit on it. They're like, fuck you, hockey players are the best fucking athletes in the world, and fuck, NBA's lazy. And I'm like, I feel like there's a lot of racism in the
definitely some identity attached to it.
Yeah.
There definitely is. I don't understand how you can be the fan archetype that I never understand is the only fan of hockey.
Yeah.
Guy. Okay. Yeah, it's fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the fastest sport. Yeah, watching hockey live is not like anything else. It's one of the coolest things I honestly believe that human beings do. Ice hockey's wild. But the type of athlete, there's no comparison. Like, if you had to pick 10 humans to go against each other, I don't even want to say 10 because that makes it a home game for football players.
Right, right.
If you had to pick 3 humans, types of athletes to go against each other, and you picked, you wouldn't pick hockey players.
No.
You just wouldn't. Yeah, they're mashers and killers. Yeah, there's a mental aspect to hockey. You have to take a slap shot in the teeth. Yeah,
right.
I have my good buddy. He is an executive for the Blackhawks. He took a hockey puck in the teeth. He lost his front 4, top and bottom. A masher, a killer. I would take him. He could fuck with a lot of people.
Right.
Until you get out of his weight class.
Yeah.
Until you get out of his weight class, or until somebody has a longer reach than him. If you're I don't know. Maybe I'm an idiot for classifying athletes based on who could murder who.
No,
but I think,
like,
that's the ultimate.
Yeah,
test.
Right. That's the ultimate. That's gladiator
test.
Shit.
Yeah, you
right?
can't put. You're not gonna. I'm sorry, but Sid Crosby, who's the best player in the world, arguably.
Yep.
And has been for a decade. Sid Crosby's not going to make it out of the first round with LeBron James.
Right. I mean, Sid, the thing is you look at Chris Paul on a basketball court and you're like, fuck, how is he even out there against these superhumans? Chris Paul's 6'1", 175. Like, he's not small. He's
decent sized hockey player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Sidney Crosby's like 6'1", 200 pounds or something like that. It's like they'd be in the same weight class.
The
you know
thing
I mean?
About hockey is, and I say this about this, I say this about like as a Packer fan, Aaron Rodgers fan, also, like, you know, at this point I'm a Pats fan. Help me walk back through this because I'm gonna lose track of what I was trying to say originally. I'm talking about just the type of what it takes to be a good hockey player. I think, and I love the Patriots at this point because they gave us 8 incredible Super Bowls and had the decency to lose 3 of them.
Yeah, thank you.
So if you're not a Patriots fan in some respect at this point, you just don't appreciate
it. I always say.
You don't know how to enjoy Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, I always say about the Patriots, especially being a Giants fan, I'm like, I always root for them to be there, just in case we get there too.
Yeah.
Then we win, yeah. You know? And it's the best. Yeah. It's the best winning.
Yes,
it's,
that's the only thing I like about the Giants.
Yeah.
But what I say about quarterbacks of that caliber is the career – time is so short in the NFL that, like, every year they stay in the league, they get that much better than their competition.
Right.
Because they just know the game that much better. They're that much more equipped. And now, you know, I just went to the Rams game at the Coliseum on Sunday, and Aaron Rodgers just is, you know, we were 9.5-point underdogs.
Yeah.
First of all, that's Vegas telling Green Bay they should have fired their coach 2 years ago. I looked it up, dude. I don't know I couldn't find what the biggest underdog Tom Brady's ever been. But it sure as fuck ain't 9.5 points.
Right.
He's a favorite 50 games going into this season. I want Mike McCarthy fired.
Yeah.
Today. Like, if it came out,
I want it.
If it came out that Mike McCarthy
4 years ago,
I'd be ecstatic. But instead they traded our Pro Bowl safety.
Right. No, McCarthy's a
mope.
It's the biggest waste of talent ever. I mean,
it's tough.
I am of the opinion.
It's tough to watch.
That Aaron Rodgers is the greatest quarterback of all time.
Statistically, yeah.
Yeah.
Except, but, you know, it's tough to compete with. He says all you need to say about that. It's like, I mean, the guy's got 5 Super Bowls.
Right.
What are you going to say? So, back to my point.
I'm going to say Mike McCarthy's a fucking boob. And free Aaron Rodgers of that.
Free Aaron Rodgers.
Give the guy a chance.
Give him a chance. Let him run. Put him in the shotgun. Let him call the plays. Enough of this nonsense. Please don't run it into Domicon Sue's chest when you're 5 yards in the end zone.
So, hockey players.
Hockey players. The thing about hockey is it takes so long to get good at hockey. To get really good at hockey, and there's kids that are just lights out. You know, there's kids that know how to, you know, to use their body to control the puck. You know, it's a top and bottom game. You know, like, you know, they say cornerbacks are just receivers that can't catch.
Yeah.
You know, there's really not that much of that. I mean, you play defense if you don't have nice hands and can't shoot and can't snipe. There's a version of that, but it's a top and bottom game. You have to use your I had to learn how to skate, and then I had to learn – because I started kind of late. I had to learn how to skate, and then I had to learn how to stick handle, and I'm still not good at either.
Right.
But, like, I've been playing for 30 years.
Yeah. Like, in basketball, you already know how to run. You're already there.
You know, it's not like you just get a jump shot. You have to learn how to keep your elbow in. You have to learn, you know, how to follow through. You have to learn how to square up. You have to learn – I'm not saying basketball is not a top and bottom game, but hockey, you have a – you have a utensil. You have a 5-foot utensil and the pocket. I mean, it's a very precise game, hockey. But, and every sport is. I understand every fan of every sport is going to say that. But I'm just saying hockey takes a long time to get good. And there's a reason why these guys can play longer. You know, like a Timu Solani can play till he's whatever he was, 42 years old or something
Is Jágr still in the NHL?
He is. I think he's on a roster right
that's
now.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
He was on fucking NHLPA 92.
I know.
You know,
that is.
Like, I imagine, I imagine there's dozens of guys that were also on that video game that are dead now.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Is Jeff Boogaboom alive? He can't be. Like, he just can't be. Like, yeah.
Dude, I mean, it's also I maintain that the low impact, the kind of gliding aspect. I mean, but these guys are playing with killers. I mean, it's full contact up there. It's got everything to do with knowing where to be when and
now
knowing.
You talked about your buddy who got all his teeth knocked out. What, like, of all the sport, like, why aren't these guys wearing masks? Why isn't? Is that just like an ego thing? Is that just like
I mean, you can't fight with a mask on,
right?
It's about there. That's definitely an element to the game, because there is such. I mean, you're playing. Like I said, I called it a utensil. I also could have called it a weapon. Like,
right.
You're playing with, you know, guys, and it's very easy. You can precisely break someone's wrist if you want, and you have to keep that from happening. And so there has to be these animals on the roster,
right?
And then. It has everything to do with how they call the game.
Yeah.
I get back to hating hockey fans. Not that I hate hockey fans, but the whole, like, nothing's wrong with the game, the whole, like, pridefulness and it's our own little special, you know, pet, and I'll love it and hug it and kiss it and pet it and call it George. It's just like, dude, it's evolving. I mean, first of all, the equipment is so much different now. You know, that makes the play faster and better and more precise and more accurate. Why don't you change the rules? Why don't you make penalties mandatory? You know, so that a team's on a power play for two. Power plays are great. It's exciting to watch a shooting gallery.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think there should be way more scoring in hockey, and there should have been for a long, long time. The fact that the two-line pass was a thing at all is the oldest, clunkiest, whitest rule.
Right.
In the fastest, best sport, in my opinion, in the world.
Are there versions of it that isn't a rule, like international or
amateur?
Well,
it's not now. It's not. It just was.
Forever.
The two-line. And you could do, like, the neutral zone lock or whatever the Devils won two cups with, you know, around 2000, whenever they did, right after in the middle of Detroit's dynasty, you know, the only reason that the Devils were good, but
yeah.
And then
fuck New Jersey.
And then, I don't know, man, I just think I'm leading into a rule change that I've been trying to sell for years. I think they should make the blue line wider and extend it into the zone. So once you get it in, to get it out is still as hard for the defense, but you have more, you can get closer to the net before you have to tag up for the offense.
Got it.
And I think that would make these small guys, you know, these small, you know, these dudes that can, these burners, just that much more valuable.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, I don't know if you've paid attention at all this year, but Toronto's phenomenal.
Yeah.
They're so fast.
I don't pay attention at all.
And
I just want to go and watch the game. Like, I'm always down to go watch a hockey game. But other than that, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm watching.
It's really fun to watch.
Yeah.
When hockey's fast and precise and shit. I mean, people whine about watching it on TV.
It's funny, though, because that's the thing about hockey is, like, I think when I watch, you know, I could watch a high-level high school basketball game, you know, like, if I could watch two national powerhouses, but, like, otherwise high school basketball, you're like, what the fuck is this? This is like watching, you know, the 80s Celtics. It looks like it's in slow motion.
Yeah.
Hockey, like, I could watch a high school hockey game.
College hockey.
Yeah, college hockey. It's like
college hockey's totally fun to watch. Yeah. No, by the way, my podcast, The Visitor's Locker Room, check us out. We're on SoundCloud.
Who do you host that with?
CJ Sullivan. We've been doing that show. Actually, we started as an internet radio show at an internet radio station in Chicago in 2004, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, we were around. We had a, you know, it was that generation of Chicago comedians, you know, like Hannibal, Kinane, Kumail always used to come through.
Yeah.
And it was always a thing. But then one of our buddies passed away and then I moved. So the show's kind of like, but we've started doing it again. But I've been starting out every
What's it called again?
The Visitor's Locker Room.
Visitor's Locker Room.
Yeah.
It's everywhere that you can get podcasts.
Nope, just on SoundCloud.
Just SoundCloud.
Oh, great. I had to learn how to produce a podcast because that's the only way we're going to do it. Like, CJ wasn't going to do it, but he's ridiculous and hilarious. So, I mean, I'm happy to get the show going again. And so we have, you know, we do as many as we can. We're both on the road at different times. So, we usually put one out every couple of weeks. But I've been starting out episodes with high school basketball buzzer beaters.
Oh, nice.
Which is super fun.
Yeah.
If you got somebody calling a high school game, it just sounds – it's a very distinct sound.
Fantastic.
And it's totally watchable. Those are great. Those are great highlights. But, yeah, hockey is one of those things where, like, you can watch, like a lower level and it's still phenomenal. I just think that the problem with hockey for on TV is that I don't think anybody really articulates very well is that it's consumed as is basketball. You're watching 5-on-5. If you take the goalies off, it's 5-on-5. You know, the goalies are in the hoop. The goalies are the backboard. And you're watching it go up and down the court the same. But the difference is a hockey rink is 2.5 basketball courts. But that's not – that doesn't translate visually to somebody that doesn't know.
I had no idea that that was the case.
Doesn't go right, and you're a sports fan.
Yeah,
you've been.
I mean, I knew it's bigger.
You knew it's bigger.
Yeah,
but it's much bigger. They just cover the ground at the same pace,
right?
Because they're faster and they make it look, especially on TV, they make it look like a basketball court.
Yeah.
Well, then in that case, there needs to be more scoring. If you're up against basketball visually, don't make people wait. There should never be a 2-to-1 hockey game.
Right.
The puck is so small. The puck to net ratio compared to basketball to basketball. I'm not saying that you should score every time up and down but there should be, you should make it more advantageous to the offensive players in order to make it more rewarding to the viewer. And, you know, you're going to get pushback every single time you say that from hockey players. There's nothing wrong with the game. It's great. You got to appreciate the defense. Shut up. I've played it my whole life. You can play good defense without making it boring as fuck.
You could play good defense in a game that you give up 4 goals.
Right. Or 8 goals.
Yeah.
You could play good defense in a game you give up
10 goals.
Now
we're talking fucking hockey.
That's what I'm saying. There should be – hockey games should be 8 to 10.
Well, we have the title, Nate Craig Making Hockey Great Again.
Make hockey great again. Well, I mean, just make it – just make – bring hockey up to date.
Make hockey great once. Finally. So
add hoops.
First of all,
put boards on the ice.
Yeah.
Get some 7-foot black guys.
Yeah, exactly. Visitor's Locker Room, Preferred Customer.
Yeah.
That's the album.
Yep.
You're on Twitter.
Twitter, Hype Man.
Hype Man. Were you always Hype Man?
No, I changed. I had the handle, and I was just like, and then I was Nate Craig Live on Twitter and Instagram, and I just thought that was boring.
It's your hype man.
And Hype Man's fun, and it's shorter.
Yeah.
You know, a shorter handles can, you know, keep you in the game.
Yeah.
Got to stay in the game. Keep you in the tweets.
And you're Nate Craig Live on Instagram.
Nate Craig Live on Instagram, yeah.
Cool.
So,
and
Watch Maniac on Netflix.
Watch Maniac. And where are you going to be coming up? Where can people come see you do stand-up?
I'll be at Zany's in St. Charles, Illinois, November 29th through December 1st. And I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin, where I'm from. I'll be at the Brink Lounge December 22nd and 23rd. And then off in February 7th through the 10th, I'll be at Go Bananas in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Guys, go to all those shows. Get Nate's album. Listen to the first track, and if you don't proceed after that, I'll give you your money back.
It's a hook. Also, I'll be at Reds in San Diego. If you got listeners in San Diego,
yes, absolutely, great show.
It's one of the best shows in the country.
So fun! I just did it
the night before Thanksgiving, dude. I married into San Diego. I mean, that's another. I mean,
you're winning.
I think it's a pretty solid move.
Yeah, yeah. Go see him at Reds. If you just came and saw me there, go see Nate. It'll be an awesome show. I know it will.
It's always awesome.
Thanks for coming, buddy.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, Joe, I like your show. I tell everybody that's my shit. See, I had a long ride, turn the volume up high, and the time flew by so quick. I laughed out loud, that's what it's about. I really don't feel safe no more. And Joe stands out even in a big crowd, because he drinks till he hits the flow. Hey, Joe.
time to stop the show. Pack it up and away we go. Donate 'cause we almost broke. Everybody, that was Joe.